So anybody who's attending, who's participating, taking refuge, precepts, the formal ceremony in the style of Namdrim Rinpoche and Theravada Mahayana, and the Bodhisattva vows or commitments, please make sure you get your name into Marian early, okay? As soon as you decide on that. Good. Well, Shalana, if you begin the preliminaries with some increased tempo.
Increased tempo.
But not too fast.
Too fast.
And not too slow. Okay. But just right.
Excellent body and mind with leisure and endowments will be difficult to obtain repeatedly in the future. Right now we will accomplish the state of the unsurpassed Samantabhadra to meaningfully benefit others. Also, it is not certain when the hateful enemy of this present precious body, the Mara of death, will arrive. I and other beings are impermanent, the time of death being uncertain. Since there is no opportunity for happiness wherever one is born in samsara, and since our happy existence was never seen, we will enter the path of nirvana. In order for this body with leisure and wealth to possess meaning, we will abandon the three non-virtuous poisonous afflictions, develop diligence in virtuous actions, and protect the vows and commitments of the three doors.
Going for refuge.
Namo Dasha Namkanyam Pe Samchenam Dudine Zola Ve Jashtubha Chitla Kunjo Lama Lachavchi Namjo So Soli Dham Lachavchi Bajo Kunsa Kandro Lachavchi Kyanyi Sova Sanje Lachavchi Shiva Chandra Damsho Lachavji Sogi Shinjo Gendan Lachavji Trinle Nada Chokyon Lachavji.
Namo. From now until the attainment of unsurpassed awakening, I and all other sentient beings equal to space go for refuge to the Guru, source of all blessings. We go for refuge to the Adam, the source of Supreme City. We go for refuge to the Bikini, dispeller of all obstacles. We go for refuge to the Buddha, the first among humans. We go for refuge to the Sublime Dharma, peaceful and free from attachment. We go for refuge to the Sangha, the supreme field of accumulation. We go for refuge to the Dharmapalas, masters of activity.
Namo.
Now until the attainment of unsurpassed awakening, I and all other sentient beings equal to space go for refuge to the Guru, the source of all blessings. We go for refuge to the Adam, the bestower of Supreme City. We go for refuge to the Dakini, dispeller of all obstacles. We go for refuge to the Buddha, the first among humans. We go for refuge to the Sublime Dharma, peaceful and free from attachment. We go for refuge to the Sangha, the supreme field of accumulation. We go for refuge to the Dharmapalas, masters of activity.
generating bodhicitta. May all sentient beings of samsara be free from suffering, be joyful and truly abide in supreme happiness. We generate the supreme mind impartial towards all in order to attain the heart of awakening. In order that we may fully benefit the beings of the six realms, we must attain to the stage of Buddhahood in this very lifetime. Therefore, we will be very diligent in these unsurpassed teachings, the path of the luminously clear Vajra essence. May all sentient beings of samsara be free from suffering, be joyful and truly abide in supreme happiness. We generate the supreme mind impartial towards all in order to attain the heart of awakening. In order that we may fully benefit the beings of the six realms, we must attain to the stage of Buddhahood in this very lifetime. Therefore, we will be very diligent in these unsurpassed teachings, the path of the limitlessly clear Vajra essence. Vajrasattva. Om Om Vajrasattva Samaya Mamma Palaya Vajrasattva Teno Bhatishta Jito Me Bhava Sita Kaya Me Bhava Sipa Kaya Me Bhava Anarata me bhava, sarva siddhi me prayach, sarva karma sucha me chittam shriyam guruvam, ha 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 ho bhagavan, sarva tata gata, vendrima me mucha, vendribhava mahasamaya sato ha. Om vendrasata samaya amane palaya, Vansa sata tena patishta jita me bhava Sita kaya me bhava Sipa kaya me bhava Anurakta me bhava Sarva siddhi me prayacha Sarva kama sicha me chitam shriyam guru hum Ha 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 ho bhagavan Sarva tata gata Vendra ma me mucha Vendra bhava Short mandala offering. Sa-sa-shi ko-shu shu-shi me-to-tran Ri-ra-li-shi ni-de-jum-pa-di San-ri-shi-ta-mi-te-po-wa-di is moistened with scented waters, arranged with flowers, adorned with silver of the four continents, as well as them in the moon. By offering the visualized Buddha field, may all migrating beings take birth in the pure Buddha field. Om Guru Deva Dakini Ranamandala Pratichas. pure awareness. In the palace of unceasing inner radiance is one's own vibrant energy, the root guru, to whom we supplicate with a devoted mind. Bless us to accomplish the rainbow body. Om Ha Hum. In the Buddha field, one's own originally pure awareness in the palace of unceasing inner radiance is one's own vibrant energy, the root guru, to whom we supplicate with a devoted mind. Bless us to accomplish the rainbow body.
So this morning, continuing with the reading transmission and explanations, or if you wish, commentary on Guru Rinpoche's Tretro text called The Vast Limitless Expanse, and then finishing off this morning with a reading and very brief, quick meditation of the what I feel is the earliest Guru Rinpoche, earliest Namjil Guru Yoga Sadhana, and a reading of that. So both, so we get to meditate together and also celebrate the birthday of Namjil Rinpoche, the founder of this retreat center and the root guru of a number of people in this room. And a number of many people who are connected to the Dharma Center community. So that will be it. And also, I picked also the time for the reading transmission and commentary on this text by Guru Rinpoche. And just a note about Namjil Rinpoche. You know, for the first time I ever met Namjil Rinpoche, and that was, I was vacuuming the floor in Sawaka House, and he walked in. To bless the house, give a house blessing. I'm still vacuuming the floor. I always had the feeling that Guru Rinpoche, this was a manifestation of Guru Rinpoche. So whenever Guru Rinpoche was invoked as a practice or anything like that, or any other time, the feeling of Guru Rinpoche being in the room or Guru Rinpoche being in the mind was quite easy. Beautiful and powerful. And on a number of times, not only was I certain, but on a number of times I heard little whispers from Namjil Rinpoche at the side of his mouth that yes, indeed, he was a manifestation of Guru Rinpoche. And to me, it was always clear, very clear. But some manifestations, I think, in the history of recognition, go unnoticed or go unrevealed. So there we go. So I'm very happy. So one of the reasons for picking this text is for today and ending it today is because of celebrating Namjil Rinpoche's birthday. So when I read this, it is like experiencing his mind. Fantastic. So we left off on page 4, 1.6, introducing emptiness as appearance. When we get to the end of 1.6, we really have the first set of introductions. This is almost like a grouping. Up to 1.6 is really like the introduction. Then after that, it's the clarifying of the introduction. It's almost like going deeper so that one grasps it and enters it even more fully and more deeply. Okay. And these 1 to 6 also conform to a very standard way in which Mahamudra is introduced as well. Introduced and one then gets to meditate on it. Then hopefully you have the opportunity to report back to your teacher. If not, you have to clarify them within yourself and make sure. 1.6, introducing emptiness as appearance. Without existing, appearing energy appears as everything. We can also put in there, without truly, remember, without existing is short form for without truly existing, without substantial existing, without solid existing. Appearing energy appears as everything. So when we talk about illusion, we talk about illusory body, we have this fuzzy term that we use in English, which in physics is not fuzzy at all, although nobody knows what energy is, although the equations are absolutely amazing for using energy and describing energy. They're unbelievably accurate, useful equations. We wouldn't have lights, we wouldn't have computers, we wouldn't have cell phones, we wouldn't have GPS, we have nothing like that if we didn't have extraordinarily accurate equations describing energy. But still nobody, no physicist knows what energy is, which is interesting, isn't it? They don't know what it is. Matter of fact, they don't know what the major amount of energy in the universe is, called dark energy. They have not a clue what it is, which is really something.
It's like 95% of the mass.
We don't want to really stray into a physics class, but no, yes and no. 95% of the universe currently made up of energy and matter is not known what it is. But any matter that is not known has its equivalent in energy. Therefore, what the amount is hard to say, but it's probably, anyways, the current agreed upon number is there's only 5% of the matter that is seen and determined in the universe, called baryonic matter, or the matter that we know, has ever been determined. All the rest is unknown. Don't know what it is. Is that something? So there's some fundamental misunderstandings, not knowings of the universe. So when the word energy is used, people use the word energy all the time, but I always caution people to try to understand what they mean by energy. Energy is a very vague term, but the only way that you could ever know energy is you have to sense it. Is that right? Just think about it for a minute. So really when we use the word energy, we're talking about sensing something. But when we talk about this kind of energy, we're not talking about obvious sensing. It's extremely subtle until it becomes extremely manifest. I mean, when you read about, you know, the 15th Karmapa holding his hand up and actually picking a Dorje out of space and saying, oh, another treasure, I'll put it away for somebody else. That's a level of manifest energy of mind that's quite extraordinary. For him, that's pretty ordinary. For us, that's pretty extraordinary. So when they talk about this appearing energy, it appears as everything. What we miss is how it comes to be. Because our minds are moving so quickly, our awareness is way too, if you want, not gross in a negative way, it's just too speedy to see how all this comes about, how it all blossoms. So this energy of mind, this energy of empty appearance mind appears as everything. And this is contrary to everything almost all of us have ever been taught. So it's hard. If you grew up in this culture, you will be taught that this already exists. The earth already exists. Everything you see already exists, right? And you can make it. You can make it in a blender and then you have a smoothie, but you've got these component things that you put together. They exist. And then a smoothie exists. But there's no understanding, recognition of the influence of consciousness or mind in the process. That has become, in the last few years, major conferences in physics. Interesting, because you've asked about that. Today, every year, there are major conferences in physics, mainstream conferences, that say there's something fundamentally wrong. We have to bring mind and consciousness into physics because we know that mind and consciousness are a major component, but we just don't know what it is. So we see back here 1,000 years ago or 2,000 years ago, a very good understanding from the experiential point of view. So it says here, this appearing energy pervading everything is without change. It is without limitation, without any boundaries, without any constraints, and does not fall into partiality, into subject-object, into right or wrong. So this is, again, a pointing out instruction, finding and experiencing that pure primal energy, that pure primordial, self-existing, natural energy. I like the word nature. Natural is often, it's in Dzogchen, it's also a lot in Mahamudra. Natural, finding natural. So I'd like to introduce that word for you. Look for the natural. Look for, not because it's of nature, but because it's spontaneously, effortlessly there, without any mental contrivance or clinging, then we have natural. In the essence, back the text, in the essence of the Dharmakaya itself, there is nothing that does not exist, and everything can arise. So this takes out the misconception, which you see a lot of time written and so on, is that Dharmakaya has no manifestation. Dharmakaya has manifestation. Dharmakaya has ungraspable manifestation. It's a difference. Ungraspable. Whereas Nirmanakaya, which is a manifestation of the Dharmakaya, you will be able to touch, hear, sense a Nirmanakaya. Does that make sense? And for some, they can actually sense, touch, come into contact, if you wish, with a Sambhogakaya. But it's very refined and very awake. It says in the Tantras, unobstructed energy arises everything. So there's another key point. Unobstructed energy. Not bound. Free. Totally free energy. Free to describe. Free to manifest. Free to liberate. So this is a key point. Unobstructed energy arises as everything. And of course, these statements are coming from absolutely profound meditation experience. You'll see in some of the instruction texts, which you're not supposed to look at until you've been initiated into, but the instruction texts of Togyal and some of the great masters like Karmalingpa and so on, in their inner biographies or secret biographies, describe these types of meditative experiences with utter detail. Unbelievable. Where they are abiding in that realm of unobstructed energy and manifestation. It is empty, luminous awareness and unchanging. Nothing gets born. And yet, all can manifest. So this is the conundrum for the mind that wishes to grasp after birthing or deathing, is that in the midst of unchanging luminous awareness, free luminous awareness, anything can happen. Time can happen, and timelessness can happen. But no, there's either time nor no time. No, there's time and no time. There's manifestation and nothing being manifested. That's fine. So you'll know it's fine when you have these experiences. It's fine. Before that, it may be, I don't like this. I want it this way or that way. I want my toast either dark or light. But toast isn't dark. Do you mean by that? No, you don't mean. Do you remember that, Zoomers? So for some, toast should always be light, right? And for others, toast should be dark. And for others, toast should be medium. And they will get very upset if it's light or medium or dark, right? What's that? Okay. But toast can, At any given time, simultaneously in the universe, TOS can exist as what? Light, medium, and dark. And nor can light, medium, dark be determined as anything actually at all. Has the same nature. What's the same nature? Shunyata. Same. Does that mean you always make toast that has no, it's never been the toaster? See, you take some, here's a piece of toast, never been the toaster, it's toasted. Okay, 1.7, that's very esoteric. That would be the instructions of a teacher, a guru. Here, have some toast.
Long before, quick question.
Or have toast. We used to have it in some English hotels, untoasted, cold. Yes. Call it toast. And well, here's some cold butter. For a Canadian, that's just so weird, you know? Try to get your head around it. Yes.
I just want to clarify that they're equating energy to awareness.
Mm-hmm.
Unobstructed energy to empty luminous awareness.
And yet the energy that can manifest all, yeah,
yes,
is the same as conditioned awareness,
uh-huh,
but it's not. So this is always the very crucial point. It's the same, but it's not. It's like saying, I don't care what thoughts I have. I don't have to care at all what my thoughts are. It's all Rigpa. It's all primordial awareness, right? Wrong. Yes, but wrong. Because if you do that, then you'll never purify. Yeah? So therefore you have to say, it is, but actually it really isn't. From the standpoint of an awake mind, it is not at all. It's just a fantasy. It's just a creation of mind. 1.7, introducing appearance and emptiness as non-dual. Well, that's the point there. We've just covered it, but we're going to go into more detail. In that way, the existence of cause and conditions of all appearances is not to be found. No karma and no result is found anywhere at all. In this, without action or partiality, appearances pervade the expanse of the nature of mind. So in the freedom of unbounded mind, there is no cause, there's no creation nor cessation, and therefore there is no cause and conditions. But it doesn't mean that for the conceptual mind, there won't be cause and conditions, and you can be very accurate about cause and conditions. As I said, the equations and the work with what's called energy and matter is extremely sophisticated. Therefore, for conceptual minds living in a conceptual universe, it works really, really well. It just doesn't happen to ultimately be the case. However, even though there are appearances, their essence is empty. So you may say that's just intellectual. There's no solidity. No, actually, there's nothing there. So you may say, well, how's that possible? So from a scientific point of view, it's only been in the last 30 years that the working out of how we experience the world by an organism is getting really quite detailed. And if you look at papers on what's called neurocognitive biology, it's quite something. You can go into now to the detail where they time the amount of time it takes to actually get an image formed and where the parts of those images get constructed. For us, we go, what happens like faster than that, right? There's Laurel. It's faster than you could even imagine. But unless you really slow down your cognitive processes, you won't see that in fact it actually takes time to build this experience. Does it make sense? And the only way that's going to happen is you suddenly come into this experience because of previous work or some shock or stroke or perhaps a drug of some type or anesthetic or hit your head or whatever it is. Or you practice until these experiences happen. You slow down the cognition. Then you say, well, of course, the being or the wall or the text was always there even if it had to be reconstructed. The point is, even if it is there, it's in no way how the relative mind conceives it. Does that make sense? So we forget about how much conditioning we've had, and many of us forget what it was like to experience the world as a baby and as a very young child. I don't know if some of you do, but I have recollections as a child that are very different than sensing like this. But I don't recall anybody saying you can't sense like that. But from my recollection, also my studies when I did this work with children and studied cognitive development in children for my master's degree, doing interviews with kids and spending time with little kids, it was great. Did a whole semester on that, wrote a paper on that, cognitive development in little kids, is they pretty much don't see the world the way we do. We have to actually slowly help them build up this world. Yeah. This is like a reflection of planets and stars in the ocean, which primordially abide as non-dual appearance and emptiness. This refers to, I think, what I feel is a very classic experience of the appearance of the, if you wish, of the universe, the appearance of the phenomenal universe, at least the solar system or galaxies, or even many, many galaxies appearing within the infinite, pure, illuminated body of the Adam, of the Samogakaya, which primordially abide as non-dual appearance and emptiness. In other words, there's no separation between what is appearance and what is empty of any clinging or constructs. It says in Self-Liberation, the Tantra, the vessel and the contents are primordially emptiness. The ultimate and the relative are endowed with this form. There's not a separation between at all, between that which is relative and that which is empty. That has to be shattered, if you wish. I don't necessarily mean in a bad way, shattered. I mean in a good way. It has to be breached. Holding up a brass dorje, yes, is relative, and that there's something deeper, much, much deeper going on, which is called emptiness. No, they're exactly the same at the same time. It's the same nature. So it doesn't matter. So when people hear the word empty, and this is probably why we should really be using shunyata, then they're looking for this to be not. Does that make sense? Empty. But manifest is just as empty as unmanifest. Is it making sense? There's no problem whatsoever. At all. It says in the union of the sun and the moon, for whoever realizes that all objects of conceptual appearances are without any self nature, non-dual appearance and emptiness are in that. So it tells you really where you have to go. You have to examine, we all have to examine, over and over and over and over again, all forms appearing to us and what their nature is. How do you do that? Traditionally, how that's done is the first step is going to know your mind's nature without objects. That's called just the experience of Dharmakaya, or the nature of the settled mind is the first step, traditionally for most beings. Does that make sense? In other words, you have to get rid of all the objects to see the nature of the mind unbound, non-conceptual. Then the next step is you need to look at the thoughts and see if the thoughts actually have any solidity. The next step, these are three steps, classic three steps. The next step is to see if any appearances, body, especially body, because there's so much clinging around body, walls, floors, trees, people, organisms, anything, has any solidity, has any fixed nature at all. Okay? Those are the three.
Would you mind repeating those?
One is the realization of the settled mind, the nature of the settled mind, thought-free awake mind. The second is the energetic nature of thoughts. What is the nature of thoughts and feelings, all mental phenomena? And then number three is the nature of appearances. Can you jump all over those, right across all those? Yes, but to be really to really know what it is that you've experienced, they go in stages. Hmm? How's that? Anybody have any questions? That's the three. That's the standard three.
I do have a question.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess we have to just continually consciously observe it over and over and over for it to really switch in our relative mind.
That's correct.
Okay.
The relative mind, we're so used to it, we really feel it's so normal. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
All this is completely normal. Mm-hmm. So it takes a lot of sitting with it.
Mm-hmm.
Sitting, standing, lying down, whatever you
mm-hmm.
do. Walking, doesn't matter. But mostly sitting. Why sitting? Because you get the most settled energies.
Mm-hmm.
The sal. It settles. Therefore, you have the best opportunity. But not always.
Mm-hmm.
Right? There's beings that have extraordinary experiences walking. Or extraordinary experiences standing, or lying down, or in between. Don't think in between is a problem either. Sometimes in between is when you're out of the way. You're not thinking about something. You're just doing something in between. So because we don't think this way until it gets really difficult, which is good insight. How sticky this conceptual experience is. It's just normal. So you really have to sit with it, with the pith instructions to drive through the veil, which is exactly what it is. And some of you have reported that to me, which is great. Literally like an invisible veil that you know you're not penetrating. That's a really profound experience. You know you're on the edge. You have to keep on going. And that can be days and weeks and months. It feels like there's literally like the veils of Salome, you know, in the Western tradition. Veils that you can't really see, that are just in your way to getting to clear seeing.
Mm-hmm.
And they have to fall.
Mm-hmm.
And they take time. And they take merit. So the more merit that you have, the stronger your mind is, capacity.
Mm-hmm.
And samatha, and thought-free mind, is the greater the opportunity that those veils will fall. And they're karmic veils. Which means they're conceptual veils. But we don't know because we've been in so much conditioning. Even by the tender age of 21 or 22 or 23 or 24, the conditioning is enormous. And then if you look at the Buddhist texts, they'll say, it's not just the conditioning of this life.
Mm-hmm.
It's the conditioning of so many lifetimes.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not impossible. As a matter of fact, it's actually, the Vajrayana path is said to be quite easy. But you actually have to do the work. So there's some people waiting for it to happen. You can't wait. You have to actually build the possibility, but you're not really building the possibility. You're building the merit for the opportunities for the mind, as you say, to literally turn, to see a different way.
Mm-hmm.
It has all to do with the energies and the pranas as well. So lots of purification. And even if you have a glimpse of this, you may not actually know what has been glimpsed very deeply. You have to know. Therefore, we practice. We practice, we look at a text, we are given or introduced, given teachings, and that knowledge, as we practice, becomes clearer and clearer and clearer. So here we have the last line, non-dual appearance and emptiness are in that. This experience is non-dual. Dual appearance, emptiness. There's not a shred of difference. It can't be said that there's a dorje, nor there is there no dorje. Number 1.8, introducing non-duality as self-liberated. So all this has been already introduced. These are clarifications. Okay, it's all been introduced already. These are, if you wish, deeper clarifications. The awareness of the self-arisen ultimate meaning is self-liberated. Non-dual luminosity and emptiness. That is the introduction to the realization of the Buddhas. So this is very, very profound, as it all is. The awareness of the self-arisen, ultimate meaning, is self-liberated non-dual luminosity. So this expression, self-liberated non-dual luminosity and emptiness, is the key to the Buddha's experience. So are you aware of it or not aware of it? Now, I just want to go a little bit slow here. The reason why we practice inner yoga is we practice the yoga, if you wish, the yogas or the practices of the central channel and the awareness of the central channel and the practices of the Adam and so on, is to come to the luminosity aspect. Otherwise, if we don't, this is to bring the inner energies and the inner yoga, if we don't, then there's a very good possibility we'll never, even if we meditate on Dharmakaya as empty, there's a very good possibility that we won't come to the luminosity aspect, the compassion, light aspect of the empty aspect of the mind. So, it's pointing. Here, we will come to this, is pointing to the three Buddha bodies, is pointing to the reality, if you wish, of the three Buddha bodies, not just the realization of the empty Dharmakaya, but the luminous Dharmakaya and how it actually manifests to awake minds and to relative minds. Yes, now back to your question.
I'm just trying to understand luminosity. Precisely, what are they meaning by that? Is it to do with without luminosity, it has a quality that there would be no manifestation?
That's right, it would be completely unmanifest
and
empty of any solidity, whereas in fact, that's not actually true.
So what we are actually experiencing in our environment as we are through our senses is a reflection of that luminosity?
Exactly, a reflection of that luminosity.
And so, in that sense, our senses are actually radiant, and it's an experience of the mirror-like wisdom, but mistaken as objects that are real outside of us?
They're pointing to something more than that. So, the lesser illumination is the senses lighting up. That anybody can have. You can hit your head on the floor. I mean, I know someone who well, we won't go there. But anyways, there are beings that are suffering from we call mental illness that can have experiences, you know, but they can hardly walk. This aspect of luminosity is not just light, it's actually the yidam light. It's the sambhogakaya level, not just the radiant level of senses. That's called in the teaching, and Namjoon is a very good explainer, that's called the lesser illumination, which you want to go and have. That is the mind full of light. That when you hear at the Dharma Center or you're meditating, if the trees all of a sudden look, well, they're radiant yesterday too. Look at the ground. It's radiant. You pick something up and you go. And you can be absorbed in that smell for hours, yes? Or you're in your room and it's dark and everything's lit up. You've had all these, many of you have had these experiences. The room's just lit up. You go, whoa. And you can stay like that for a long time and go, this is amazing, eh? That's called the lesser luminosity. The inner luminosity is when the light, the pure lights come and manifest, and the yidams, the mandalas of the yidams manifest. That's the luminosity we want to get to. Therefore, you have to purify your channels. If you don't purify your channels, then you'll stay with the lesser luminosity, and you'll cling to the lesser lights, which are the lights, but they're just not purified. That's all. Make sense? let me give you an example. Maybe this makes sense. It just arose, so let's go with it. I haven't thought about it, but let's go. Have all of you played a musical instrument, no matter what it is? Have you all tried a musical instrument? And when you start to try to play a musical instrument, you play notes that are not pure notes. But they're pretty good, right? In other words, you go, that's pretty good. But a really fine, perhaps music, it's not quite it. Well, you don't know what quite it is. But when you play a really perfect note, you know, this is like the pure note that comes out when the purification is done and the symphony is pure, or the concerto is pure, or the music is pure, yeah? Because the notes are also pure, right deep inside. This is like it is. Yeah. So therefore, you can have, as it says in the text, you can have experiences of emptiness, but they won't be experiences of luminous emptiness. Is that all making sense to you?
There's no
there's no path to purify the inner channels, and there's no path towards Buddhahood. It's a path towards emptying out. Therefore, you get empty experiences, but it's not actually luminous. It's not so luminosity has a number of aspects. One, it must be boundless loving compassion for all beings. To want to liberate, not just to care for, liberate. That means bring them out of clinging. Without effort. In other words, you're not sitting there going like this. I love all beings. May all beings be well and happy. No. It's just natural, great, pervasive compassion. Wishing all beings to be liberated. That's one aspect of it. The other aspect of it is the seeing or the experiencing or the hearing of the mandalas, of the adams, of that level. That has to do with purification. So, the communicative level of Dharma as great love, the purification of all phenomena as pure, the embodiment aspect of all phenomena as being radiant, free energy, and the other aspect of luminosity is the being able to communicate and liberate beings through that radiant energy, not just reside in emptiness. Okay. Therefore, we have refuge on the refuge tree, which has outer, inner, secret, and suchness levels. Not just empty. Yeah. Okay, so I'll come a little bit more. Self-awareness does not have substance or characteristics. Please underline that. There you go. This type, let's instead of saying self-awareness, this quality of awareness, this innate awareness, that has knowledge of primordial wisdom, does not have substance or characteristics. If you're still embroiled in its characteristics and its solidity, then it's not this type of awareness. This intangible empty essence is Samantabhadri of the Dharmakaya, is the, if you want, the consort, the Buddha consort energy of the Dharmakaya. In other words, it has no characteristics. Do you know, and I think one of the best words for that, to describe that, is ungraspable. You just can't grasp it. Yeah, you could write a poem, but you'll know that the poem was never it. All right. Okay, that is the wisdom. Oh, that's not really right. That is the consort aspect. That is like the empty empty wisdom body. Okay, the Samantabhadra, the emptiness of emptiness is not merely nothing. It's a lot. In its own place, there is clarity and lucidity. So this is the other aspect of luminosity. And so now I want to introduce that. Every time we have an experience, we have cognizance. Does that make sense? Like to actually know an object of the mind, whether it's empty or solid, doesn't matter, they're both the same. We actually have to have a cognizance about it. Now, do you know what I mean by that? It's like a knowledge about it that has no words. So, how do you do this? At the moment that there is experience, one experiences the knowing aspect of awareness. That's luminosity. Okay? That lucid knowing without words, although it could be with words, but from the Dharmakaya aspect, no words. That knowing aspect, the nature, which is this kind of knowing, there's not a shred of doubt of its nature. That's called the cognizant, and that's the luminosity aspect. The aspect that can't be even described or can't even be known is the consort aspect, like the empty vessel. The bell, Samantabhadri, Samantabhadra. Knowing and unknowable. Does that make sense? That's the empty part, if you wish. That is the cognizant part, the luminosity part and the emptiness part. Okay. And they're inseparable. However, there are times when there's more cognizant quality and there's times when there's more emptied out quality. Yeah. So in its own place, there is clarity and lucidity. This is luminosity and emptiness. This is Samantabhadra of the Dharmakaya, yes. By recognizing the primordial wisdom of self-arisen, non-dual luminosity and emptiness, in that way, one is liberated into the Dharmakaya of self-awareness, free from elaborations. Well, if it's really, really full, then the likelihood is you've attained rainbow body. Okay? So all of us have an opportunity, if we practice really, really well in this lifetime, if we don't attain rainbow body, we have this recognition at death. Why? Because this body and the clinging, and for a very brief instant, the clingings, all the energetic clinging of greed, all the energetic clinging of hatred, all the energetic clinging of delusion are actually dissolved at death for every single sentient being. And if we're trained to look and trained to abide, then we have an opportunity at death to actually have the realization at death. Can you have the realization this lifetime? Yes, we're just going to have to work very hard at it. Can we manifest it fully? Yes, that is called fully, completely, utterly in this lifetime, called the attainment of the rainbow body. So if you can underline this very important point, on this next line, by recognizing the primordial wisdom, recognizing it again and again and again, of self-arisen non-dual luminosity and emptiness. In that way, one is liberated into the Dharmakaya of self-awareness. So here the point here is free from elaborations, any kind of construct. So you may be saying, yes, but I'm not ready for rainbow body. I'm not ready for this particular meditation. Yes, but all of us are ready to practice the Dzogchen or Mahamudra of non-elaboration. Just relax the elaborations. Keep letting the elaborations self-liberate, self-liberate, self-liberate. Do you all know how to do that?
To explain it.
Every time there is the feeling, the whiff, you know, whiff, of any story making. I'm like this, they're like that, it will be like that, should, won't, will, couldn't, for sure is, should, be. you experience the empty nature of that expression of mind, that energy of mind, the energy of mind, not the expression. So here we are. Listen to the difference. When we're clinging, we're in pain. We're anxious. Therefore, we go after the construct. I really hope I drive this home. Right? We go after the construct, thinking that the construct is real and we need to get rid of the construct. That is where we now cling. That we create more karma doing that. We need to experience the energy of the mind of the construct, not the construct. Therefore, if we go after the construct and we see the falling away of the construct or the dissolution of the construct, we're actually still in karma. We're still abiding and believing that we have the riddance, good riddance, of fabrications. That's not liberation. It's pretty good practice. It really is good practice. So if that's a stage, excellent. Just don't get caught in that. But if you can stay with the energy behind the construct, you'll see that not only is the construct empty, but it's all just luminous awareness. Therefore, the construct is liberated into the Dharmakaya. It's just unbound. Otherwise, you're creating more karma because you're going, I got to get rid of the construct. It's bothering me. Make sense? Mm-hmm. Therefore, we have wrathful yidams, we have peaceful yidams, and we have wrathful peaceful yidams. Why? Because all the constructs have the same taste. Otherwise, we're going to stay in, I got to get more good, and I got to get rid of the bad. We're not at that stage. We've gone way beyond that. This has gone beyond. This is now, we don't get rid of the good, we don't get more good, we're not getting rid of the bad, we're doing nothing. So this is where inactivity is excellent. It's not doing nothing. It's actually not engaging in concepts. It's unelaboration. We're in the energetic mind and seeing the construct as an energetic mind. That's all.
Awareness of the movement of energy.
Yes. Yes. And not caught up in the concept. And not even having a concept, I'm now experiencing the awareness of the energy.
Right.
Because that too is a concept.
There's a watcher in that case.
That's right. I got a watcher and I'm doing real good meditation.
Right.
Yeah.
And you're not even really watching things form because then you're still concepting.
That's right. That's right. So underline that, free from elaborations. How do you practice? You have to have a good smell detector. You just got to get that whiff of what elaboration is. Okay? You got to smell it. Aha. I call it the good BS detector. By recognizing the ceaseless energy of awareness. So here we are trying to halt awareness and make it non-energetic, non-thought. Here, we don't care where we're thinking or not, even though at this point, to have this experience, you have to be relatively thought-free. You can generate thoughts for the purposes of self-liberation. By recognizing the ceaseless energy of awareness, one is liberated into the Sambhogakaya, the empowerment, the secret empowerment of speech, Dharma speech. By recognizing whatever appears as self-arisen and self-liberated, one is liberated into Nirmanakaya. So if it's fully done, of course, there's great liberation. If it's a little bit done, there are glimpses and some recognition. It says in Decorated with Jewels, the complete Buddha is self-awareness. Now, dangerous statement. Because so much is being done today around that kind of thing, saying, if I'm self-aware, I'm liberated, right? That's it. I've been told that by people. I'm aware, so I'm liberated, right? No, it's not what it means. So it's confused. Then why would you ask? If you're a Buddha, why would you ask? There's still confusion. The essence of the three times is unchanging. So this is a special, what they call timelessness. The essence of the three times is timeless, unchanging, a continuum of awareness. Not regular awareness, but unbound, luminous awareness. Conditioned awareness has three times. Unbound awareness, well, that's not completely true. By the time you get to the jhanas, which is still conditioned, into the real jhanas, you will probably be having the experience of timelessness. It's a beautiful experience. I'm sure all of you have had that. Just time goes. And not because you can't get to class on time. It's not the same. You know. Or you're looking at your cell phone and 4 hours have gone by. You know, you're looking something up on the internet. No, that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about the kind of just beautiful open awareness that you know is timeless. There's just no time. The mind feels it's in placement forever. A beautiful experience, or for no ever. But that can happen in the jhanas too. The essence of the three times is unchanging. It says in the Reverberation of Sound Tantra, that which is called the liberation of one's mind does not pass from one into two. The mind is not liberated by anyone. Nobody can liberate your mind. What's the only thing that's possible to liberate your mind?
Itself.
Exactly. Primordial awareness liberates. Buddha nature liberates. It already is awake. So here's another instruction. Let primordial awareness awaken you, not more elaborations. And that takes real courage, you know. You need courage. You need Dorje Drolo. All of you need Dorje Drolo. Why? You need to be able to sit. You need to be able to sit and look for hour after hour after hour, day after day after day, and have the courage that you are Buddha nature, and Buddha nature is going to find Buddha nature. That's refuge. That's real refuge. That's the confidence in the Buddha, the Dharma, the Sangha. That's the confidence in the Guru, the Adama, and the Dakinis. It's the confidence in the Dharmakaya, Sambhogakaya, Nirmanakaya. It's the confidence in suchness. How do you remain like this day after day after day? Contemplating the empty luminosity, the empty essence, because it can get very boring. As it says in some of the inner yoga, inner texts of some of the biographies of teachers. And 3 months went by before any kind of experience. Do you have the courage to not have any realization for weeks or months? Do you see? You're going to have a lot of strength to be able to go, there will be realization. There will be realization, for sure. Even when there's apparently nothing much happening. No signs, do you mean like that? No fancy signs. You're not getting, you know, wow, that was cool. You know, and there's no fancy lights coming in. And even if you get those, you start going like this after a while, really. Another bindu. Another dorje. More sparkling lights. You get more interested in what's this nature? What's this luminous awareness? What's this freedom? Where's the freedom? Where's the freedom and the expression of freedom? This becomes the point. Doesn't mean you won't have experiences, but more and more one really doesn't care. I believe that is some sort of manifestation over there. By recognizing or over here now. Yes, the essence of the three times is unchanging. That which is called liberation of one's mind does not pass from one into two. It doesn't get more elaborate. The mind is not liberated by anyone. Nothing can nobody can liberate you. You have to do the work. But actually, guess who's doing the work on you? Not your guru. Right now, Lama Mark's doing absolutely nothing. It's great. It really is. I am the laziest teacher in the world. Maybe not in the world. I think actually, there's teachers I know that are actually even lazier, and that they're much better teachers than me. The only thing that liberates the guru encourages the wisdom mind to liberate the wisdom mind, or the conditioned mind, if you wish. Do you see? Really? In the words of Namjoon Rinpoche, one day to me, I think I've told you this, when he said, you know, he told me, mindfulness. And he was quite strong. He was in a meditation retreat practicing Vajrasattva. I walked in his room. Mindfulness doesn't liberate. Rinpoche, what does? Or sir, what does? The only thing that liberates is awareness. Your aware mind is what's going to liberate. You have to let it. You have to let yourself be liberated, not fight against it. But you're going to have confidence. You're going to have utter faith and confidence that the not only is the teaching correct, we're not talking about the cultural stuff, that the teaching, the pith instructions is correct. The practices are correct. But you'll also have to have real confidence in your mind's nature. That's called Buddha nature. You have to really be confident. Why would you practice so much unless you went, yeah, I believe it. Since there is completion from the ground, there is no going or coming. It's already happening. Nothing is found through investigation. Now, no thing is found through investigation. There's going to be a point when you have to let go of even the investigation. Where's my mind? What's the color of my mind? Where's my mind? What position is my mind? All these things. Eventually you have to let go of that. You have to just look. You have to trust. You have to have confidence. And you need to look for the unchanging nature. That's where the pith instructions come in. Since the ground has no root, next line, it has no characteristics. That's, underline that. If you're having characteristics, it's not it. Do you know what's meant by characteristics? Definitive characteristics. Definitive characteristics. Can there be light? Yes. So here it is. I've experienced liberation because I've seen light. Wrong. Liberation is this. The only thing you might be able to say is it's utter freedom. Freedom from what? Utter freedom from any kind of clinging at all. And you'll say, but then I wouldn't do anything. No, then you can do everything. You know, clinging is non-clinging is unbounded free energy. Look what you can do when you don't cling. Isn't that amazing? Infinite generosity. You could give your best shoes away. It's not just generosity. You can give your life away. You might even give your best coffee away. You might. Since the ground has no root, it's rootless. It abides as emptiness and luminosity. So, key instruction. Go take a look and see what a tree is rooted in. Not much. Isn't that extraordinary? Ever seen trees toppled over? Like after a tornado or even a windstorm? What's a tree rooted in? Maybe they have to get to the West Coast. No, we have pine trees here and things like that. Cedars, which are cypress. they fall over, right? Just with a breeze. Ever looked at what they're rooted in? Not much. Therefore, teachers occasionally push their students into. Yes.
You know, just from a pure technical or kind of practice perspective, is there a recommendation or instruction as to how to approach that moment of the glimpse? Like, is that an opportunity, or and how to dwell in that without clinging?
So the normal way that happens. Sometimes it happens by through so-called spontaneity of introduction. But often how that really happens is the mind becomes more and more thought-free, more awake. The thoughts lessen, the clinging lessens. The loving kindness goes up, the compassion goes up. And then when all the factors come together, the mind has the ability to really let go. The mass of concepts falls, and the mind really sees the wisdom mind sees the wisdom mind. That's how it happens. So for most beings, it's through the calm mind, through the calm, clear, thought-free mind, not the energetic mind. It's too energetic to see through the energy of the mind, okay? So therefore, one really has to develop relatively good thought-free awareness, okay? Because if it's too turbulent, you're going to get clinging, 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 a little bit of stopping, but actually it's no glimpse. It's samatha. It's calm. Which, right, for many people, that amount of calm feels fantastic, doesn't it? When thoughts cease, or feelings cease, or perception ceases, doesn't it feel fantastic? It's just like a space, like an open space. You go, whoa. But that's actually not a glimpse. So the glimpse happens because the mind actually sees the freedom of mind's nature, not the settled mind, not the stopped mind, but the actual freedom of mind, the freedom of awareness. Okay? That's how it's practiced. And we do all these practices, but we have to actually have periods where we stop and let the energy settle, and we look for the essence instead of the busyness and the activity. We don't look for the stop mind, we look for the essence of all experience, the awake mind. Free mind. How do you know? Not a shred of clinging. Not a shred of any characteristic at all, but the hallmark is freedom, unbounded freedom. Okay, you'll know. It's indisputable. Okay, so that's a practice point. Yeah. Any more on that, Chris?
No, thank you.
To the toilet? Okay. 1.9, Introduction to the Self-Liberation, Five Poisons. There's something arising in me which I'd like to say again and again and again. If you don't give the time to not just practice the settling of the mind and the building of merit, but if you don't give the time required, the weeks, the months to sit. So this is an answer to Chris's question to some degree. To when you're ready, or your teacher instructs you, and you have to have real confidence, but or you're ready, to actually sit like this, or like this, for the hours and the days required to look into the energetic mind, the settled mind, to keep asking the question, not like this, what's the nature of mind, what's the nature of mind, but to actually really pose it and to look and to take the pith instructions and let them be your guide, like a text like this, or the text of the three statements of Garib Dorje, these kinds of texts, or the text of the ninth karmapa, to really have the confidence when you're ready to look, energetically look, and have that wanting. Then you're waiting for something to happen, but you also need to go after it. Do you see? So I'm going to say it again. People are not getting the time both to build the merit, the practices for building merit, and the practices for special insight, which require a lot of patience, a lot of time. So you're coming up to many, many hours in a day, but you're looking. You're doing this, all these points here, okay? Otherwise, yes, you can have a sudden glimpse, but you may not be able to develop and open that sudden glimpse. The most beautiful thing in the world is to be able to do enough practice so that when a glimpse has happened, you keep coming back to that over and over and over again until it becomes extremely natural.
Right.
That's really what it is. So as many people that get glimpses, but not many people taking the time to abide in that glimpse. Let it blossom. Let the seedling grow until you've got a really powerful fruit tree. If it's a completely full fruit tree, what do you have? You have full liberation.
Yeah, okay? And that model I suggested earlier sort of suggests you're just sitting there waiting for the glimpse to happen, kind of, which I get is not, there's more to it than that. You said earlier, I wrote down, I don't know if I got it exactly right, but you said, generate thoughts for the purpose of self-liberation.
Yes, that is why we do these prayers. That is why when we sit down to practice, we don't do it mindlessly. We do it with intent. So give me all these pith instructions that are being given. Those are your fuel, your rocket fuel. Before you sit down or you stand for an hour, whatever it is, what is this unborn nature? What is this changeless nature? And then you drop it and you look. For an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours, refresh it. So you've got bodhicitta prayers, right? Boundless, luminous compassion for all beings. And what are you doing? You're looking for that nature. Yeah? So if you don't have these instructions, you're waiting for something to dawn. But as the 17th Karmapa said not so long ago, you have to go after it. But you don't go after it like this. What is unborn nature? What is the unborn nature? Like a mantra, you know. What is the unborn nature? What is the unborn nature? What is changeless nature? What is changeless? I want the changeless nature. I want. No, you have to have a settled mind. Your mind must be really settled. So, let me point to something else here. Once the power of intent has been taken, you have to abide in a thought-free wakefulness and trust that you've put enough rocket fuel of pith instructions, contemplations, and intent for the mind, the wisdom mind, to grab the wisdom mind. Does that make sense? That's what it is. So why are you here at this retreat? How'd you do it? You had a strong enough intent to make it here to the Dharma Center of Canada through obstacles. Most of you had a lot of obstacles to get here. Is that right? Quite a few. And yet, you made it. You're going to have to do exactly the same thing, is you're going to have to sit day after day, or stand and walk and sit. But you have to have the confidence that you are rocket fuel intent, which is these pith instructions, and merit, and bodhicitta, is strong enough to deliver the wisdom mind to the wisdom mind. or shatter, if you wish, shatter the conceptual mind. Yeah. Through whatever means. It might be through absolute lucidity and clarity, but it also may be through to shatter, to stop this running mind that is just clinging. Okay. 1.9, introduction to the self-liberation of the five poisons. How many pages we have to be mindful here? Ah, very good. As for the introduction to the display of the primordial wisdom of the self-liberated discursive thoughts of the five poisons, looking into the mind of the five poisons without distraction. There's your instruction. Yeah? Looking into the mind of the five poisons without distraction, without abandoning the afflictive emotions. You don't have to abandon the afflictive emotions. You don't have to push them away. Actually, at some point you do. So at the beginning, you push them away. At this stage, don't push them away. But don't do this before you're ready. Otherwise, you're going to be swamped and sitting in afflictive states going, great, I'm practicing Mahamudra. No, you're not. I'm practicing Dzogchen. No, you're not. You're just abiding in the afflictive states. So when the mind is strong enough, it can abide the afflictive emotions, as it says in the Mahamudra text, when you're that clear and calm and lucid, you actually have to generate afflictive emotions. You got to stir them up. Oh, I really want that badly. Oh my God. Oh, I want a whole container of Häagen-Dazs ice cream. No, it didn't work. Okay. So you do. You need to really generate, you know, whatever it is. So they are self-purified in the state of primordial wisdom. You have to really experience that. This purification. Thus, they are liberated. Ignorance is non-thought. Isn't that cool? All the ignorance and stupidity and dullness is nothing but non-thought, if experienced as primordial wisdom.
I don't understand that.
It's because you're clinging to thoughts. Take a look at a thought. Right now, take a look at a thought. Just generate a thought. Where is it? What is it? Where has it been? Is it real? Just try a thought. Just generate any thought. Real? Not real. Solid? Does it have a position? Does it have a location? What is it? It's actually freedom. All the thoughts are expressions of freedom. Isn't that amazing? Even a thought of, I wish to blow up the world, is a thought of what? Where's the thought coming from? It wants happiness. It wants liberation. It's just misdirected. All that is primordial wisdom energy just being thrown up. Isn't that fantastic? That's all it is. Just sit there like this. You're in a sea of seething energy wishing to be liberated and not even knowing that, and it's throwing up all these thought forms. I will, I won't, I shouldn't, I want, I can't, I'm dull, I'm happy, I'm stupid, I'm free, I'm completely liberated, I'm a Buddha. All these thoughts are what? The expressive energy of a liberated mind. That's it. That's just all it is. That's all that's happening. It just wants to be happy. How's it being happy? Pretty twisted sometimes. Have you found that sometimes? We do stuff that's pretty twisted. It's pretty weird. Whoa, why am I doing that? Just because you want to be happy, but just don't know how. All that energy of activity to be happy, be settled, be unanxious, everything is simply the awareness of awake mind throwing stuff up, but through conditioning, the light gets twisted. That's it. That's simply it. But that light, in fact, is innate awake energy. Just go look at it. Take a look right now. What's that energy? Doesn't matter what kind of thought it is or feeling, it's awake. It's utterly awake. fantastic. There's no intrinsic nature except awakeness. And it's utterly pervasive. Yeah? No? Look at the room. Just take a look. Open your eyes. What is this? It's just lovely light and energy and awakeness. That's all you are. That's all you are. Just utterly awake. And yet it doesn't feel like that because you're clinging to sensations. Just look at the mind. Look at awareness. It's utterly free. Doesn't matter what comes out of your mouth. Doesn't matter what you do. It's utterly free. Whoa. Okay. Ignorance in... So let's change this. Ignorance in fact is non-thought. Its nature is non-thought. Its essence is emptiness that is not established whatsoever. Well, we just did that. Since it does not waver from that, it does never comes out of that, it is self-liberated as the primordial wisdom of the Dharma Dhatu. Okay. There we go. Varochana. The Buddha wisdom of Varochana. Since anger is clarity. What else is anger? Give me an angry student any day. Wow, they're great. Angry students are terrific. What is that? What is all that? I hate the man. What is that?
Fuel.
It's just fuel. It's just awareness energy, wishing to be liberated. That's all. When you break something, you know, you take something and, like this precious note here. And, yeah, I don't like this note. Yeah. I don't like that note. I hope there's nothing very important. I don't like that note. What is that? It's just simply awake energy bubbling, 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 and frothing. Just go take a look and stop in the middle of that and go. It's totally free. Nothing has to be eliminated. Nothing has to be discarded. The frustration of bound energy is lovely. How many people here have ever experienced anxiety? I want to know if you're not, you know, the check for robots, you know, when you buy something, you know, verification, how many hydrants can you see, how many palm trees, and then even when you get it right, they say do it again, you know? So everybody's experienced anxiety, and you go, oh, I got to get rid of it, why, it's uncomfortable, right?
Yes.
Uncomfortable, why don't you sit in it, go, great. Anxiety. What is it? Sensations. Be with it, until it ends. Be with it and look to the awareness that's experienced anxiety. Not trying to get rid of it. This here and now, we don't get rid of it. Here we sit in it.
Enjoy it.
No, you don't enjoy it. Wrong. Don't enjoy it. Don't discard it. Don't play with it. Don't entertain it. Nothing. What is it? Unbounded energy of awakeness. That's all. And what happens when you feel good? Watch. Oh, now I feel good. I'm on the right path. I just want more good. Clinging. BS clinging. Bad practitioner. Right? Wrong. You know, like Shark Tank. Okay. So. Mm-hmm. That's correct.
Because it's completely they need help.
Absolutely. Correct. Yeah. I agree. Totally. I agree. Yeah. This is graduate school.
Right.
This is but you're so even those who are not signed up for graduate school because you got in this room, you can hear it. And one day you'll have the merit to actually do the work. So it's good to know where you're going.
Right.
And that will safeguard you from being lost for 40 years. In the stuff that you don't have to do. There is a time when you come out of primary school and you do go into first grade. There's a time when you go from grade 9 and you go into high school, and there's a time when you go into university. And there's a time, you can all go into graduate school if you have confidence. But you may not be able to do graduate school at that time, but at least you know where you're headed. Does that make sense? And that's a great safeguarding.
And there's a choice between sort of choosing to sit in it and choosing to apply some kind of antidote if it's overwhelming.
Absolutely right. So as I've taught, and Alter Rinpoche has taught, and many teachers taught, you have to have instructions in antidotes and gradual path so that you know when you need to apply them. So that is why all the way through this 3-week retreat, not so much, but some other retreats are more than others, loving kindness is an antidote.
Right.
Tonglen is an excellent antidote,
right.
Right? And so on. Relative bodhicitta is an excellent, superb antidote, and so on and so forth. Meditating on breath is an excellent antidote. They're all really good.
Prana,
all that, very, very good. This is direct. This is when you have a stable, strong mind. Okay? Yeah. So therefore, as it says, all the 84,000 means of Dharma are taught to different beings of different propensities at different times.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, all of you as mature individuals need to either ask yourself what you feel you need to do at a certain time, or ask your teacher and say, do you think I'm ready? They may say, no, I think actually you need to do such and such, or you need to do such and such, or you need to take refuge even. I've known people who've never taken refuge and go, oh my God, I took refuge, everything's like different now. You know, so absolutely correct. But don't spend too long in the antidotes. In other words, you don't have to spend the rest of your life in the antidotes.
Right.
You don't have to spend the rest of your life battling with afflictive states. You don't have to spend the rest of your life trying to rid yourself of emotion when you're never going to be able to. How's that? You'll never, ever, ever do it. By using antidotes and putting out flames with kerosene fire extinguishers, yeah? You will never put out the fire unless you come to self-liberation. You might come to relatively good insight, what I call relative insight of anicca, dukkha, anatta, but not the nature of mind. Okay? You can even come down to the ground of the cessation, which is like inky black ground. It's beautiful. Just cease everything. Your whole being has just come to a complete stop of clinging, but it's not the illuminated mind. It's not mind's nature. Okay.
Maybe part of our problem is that we apply the antidote and then we see the results of the antidote and then we go, okay, cool, let's watch some TV or something. So instead of actually then entering into the sort of completion or into the meditation on the awareness itself.
Yeah. So the old way is you teach people gradually because they have confidence in Dharma and their teachers. So it's very gradual. Antidotes, antidotes, less antidotes, less antidotes, right? Very gradual. But today, most Westerners, they don't have faith of where they're going and what the view is, really what they're headed to, which is this. Then they may just stay in fiddling with antidotes for the rest of their life. And to me, that's a great danger. Intelligent people should hear what the Dharma really is, what awakening, awake mind really is, and what the highest teachings are. And then you have to find the appropriate place for you to practice. And that's a dialogue with your teacher or occasionally a dialogue with yourself. Honestly, here I am practicing Mahamudra and I'm in a ball of emotional turmoil. Well, this isn't really going to work so well, right? So maybe I'll do a month of preliminary liberating instructions, or maybe I'll do Dorje Drolo, whatever it is. And then I'll see periods and pockets where my mind is really strong and vivid and clear. And therefore, let's turn it on. What is this unborn nature? Okay, good. So thank you for that. That's very good. Yes.
So this particular, the self-liberation of the five poisons, does that then get extended to taking the five poisons onto the path?
This is a mini five poison path.
Yeah.
This is like essence instructions of the teachings that are found in all the Dzogchen traditions, which is taking the five poisons of that. It'll be in all of them. So this is like a mini condensation. Yes.
And so the idea is then in the emotional state, instead of going through the emotional state, you're looking at the energy of the mind having the emotional state?
No.
No,
no, not really. There's still, that statement still considers that there's something that actually is emotional. There isn't. Therefore, you have to be at that point where you've seen that the energy and manifestation of motion is the energy of the mind. It's completely, has no foundation whatsoever. Therefore, it can become liberated. You have to abide in self-liberation, not in the thing of emotion. There is no emotion. There's no real thing called emotion. It's a construct of a conceptual mind dealing with sensation. Can I say that again? Hope? Emotion is a conceptual mind dealing with sensation, not knowing what the sensation is. It gives us a label called emotion. But it's nothing but the energy of the awake mind flailing about in all directions, trying to get it right so it's happy. That's all. That's all emotion is.
Energy and motion.
Exactly what it says. Emoting. Emoting. Why? It wants liberation. I mean, Namjoon Rinpoche was absolutely correct. Well, he always was. But absolutely correct when he said, in theory, all any of you need to do to experience a moment of liberation, the glimpse of liberation, is go into a nice warm room at body temperature, take off all your clothes, and lay there for 7 days aware of breath, and let every single knot and unbinding fall open. That's called torture. I know. In modern day terms, that's a method of torture. But for Namjoon Rinpoche, that was a method of release. And for me, I go, yeah, what a brilliant short method. Just take off all your clothes, be naked, and let your naked awareness eventually come to the surface. By you're going to roll this way, you know, like in bed when you're uncomfortable. You'll roll this way. You'll breathe this way. You'll try to do this. You'll try to do that. And eventually, just let go. I didn't need to do anything. So all this emotion, so always remember, Shalane and others, we are in the culture right now, the period of emotion culture. Not only me culture, but it's an emotion that's real. Everybody is in emotion that's real. It's the most important thing. For me, awakeness is the most important thing. Emotion exists relatively, but I don't want to give the viper, the pit viper, too much time in the same room. Do you understand? It's like playing with poison. There's gonna come a time when you stop playing with poisons. Or in a chemistry lab, there's comes a time in the maturation of young kids who have chemistry labs where they stop playing with explosives. And they keep moving to bigger and bigger explosive things because their chemistry is getting better, and therefore they're going to go, I can make nitroglycerin. But they have no cause and effect. I could make TNT. I could make C4. I know how to do that. No, there comes a point when you got to put the poisons away. Stop entertaining them. And this poison is a cultural habit of the most central thing of our lives is our emotion. And if we don't have emotion, we're not real. No, the teaching of Dharma is not about clinging. The teaching of Dharma is the most central position to always be in is utter free awakeness. Otherwise, you have a Dharma center. That's not a Dharma center, it's a clinging center. It's a center of clinging. We don't want that. No, we don't. Or drama center. We don't want drama centers. We want centers where people are practicing and finding and awake mind. Does that mean emotion is never entertained? You can, but don't entertain it too much, or it's like having filling your room with something that is just less and less real. Okay, but for some, the at least stable emotion, at least good emotion, is really important in their life. Does that make sense? In other words, you have to find good emotion. The teaching is very clear. First of all, you have to find a good heart. You have to find the good emotions. language of Dharma, Cheto Vimutti comes first. This heart has to be opened so you know what good emotion is like a lot of the time. That's where you start. And that you need antidotes for. You see? And at times, there's many people that need a therapist to help them with even, or therapeutic, or whatever the type of system it is, the antidote, to help them with finding a basis of more good emotions instead of bad emotions. Does that make sense? But then there's a point to pass on. You have to come out, you can come out of that. All right. I think enough said on this point. Since anger is clarity, nothing but clarity. Boy, you know when people are angry? Man, are they clear? I'm going to kill it. I'm going to destroy it. It's like really beautiful, except it's not. Is self-liberated as mirror-like primordial wisdom. Okay? Like primordial wisdom, mirror-like, which is Akshobhya, the Buddha wisdom of Akshobhya. Since pride is pride over all. Okay? If you got pride, who's got pride in this room? Pump it up. Make it big. Make it really big. I am super lama. I am the greatest lama that ever happened to the whole universe. No, 10 to the 50 universe. And really, you know, just may as well just pump it up and then take a really good look. Yeah, it's true. No, I'm just kidding. So pride has lots of power, right? Pride is power. Pride is the energy of wanting to be free. It just wants, just twisted. It just doesn't know how to be free. So I will be prideful. Who? No, I can't find it. And it's pretty good. Then you can reside in neither pride nor no pride, or pride and no pride. I never met someone who had more pride than Namjoon Rinpoche. Never met any being I've ever met had more pride. But man, was it beautiful pride. It was gorgeous. It's just like the most, wow, look at that. That's amazing. He has no problem with pride. And he's going to liberate everybody in the room through it. Wow. And then the most humble individual you've ever met. Do you think I can give a good class tomorrow? Do you think I could even... The most beautiful humility. Extraordinary. It's self-liberated in the luminosity and emptiness of the primordial wisdom of equanimity or equality, equal nature of all phenomena. I may have better talents than you, but we're the same nature and have the same possibilities. Right? And are you going to find people that always have better skills than you? Absolutely. My advice is always surround yourself with people that are better than you are. It's much easier. Really, really, it's much easier. So all beings have incredible talents, and all beings can become awakened. And all beings are the nature of luminous emptiness. Okay? Therefore, the pride vanishes. And then you can have great pride. You can know your talents. Recognizing desire as unceasing. Have you ever found a time when you're not desirous of something? Go push away all your desire right now. Just push it all away. Why wouldn't you allow it to be? What is it? Why be so scared of it? This is Tantra. This is Tantrayana. Why be so scared of desire when what is it? Awake, luminous energy of Buddha nature. Boy, can you do a lot with desire, right? We could renovate a temple. We could have a Dharma center. We could do retreats. We could have really nice food. We could feed beings really well. We could have clean water. Did you see? Desire is fantastic. How about this? If I'm a spiritual practitioner, I should have no sleep. I should have very few hours of sleep. Well, how about this? I'm a spiritual practitioner. I would like to have a good night's sleep. no matter what it is, have a good night's sleep. I shouldn't have any coffee. No, why do you have a good coffee? I should have like one cup of coffee a day. Well, who knows? If you want a cup of coffee, have a cup of coffee. If it doesn't work for you, it doesn't work for you. Who cares? Yeah, but then we'll feel all weird. Then now you've got something to meditate with. All right. Gosh. So this is very different teaching. Okay? Don't run away from it. It is awakeness. Okay? Don't go inflicting others with it. Recognizing, okay, so next one. Thus it is liberated within bliss and emptiness. You got desire, it's bliss, emptiness. That's all. It's telling you exactly what you're gonna find. Believe me, it's all you're gonna find. In the end, the desire mind, the lust mind, is full of bliss, emptiness. That's all that's in there. Recognizing jealousy as unobstructed, it is self-liberated as activity accomplishing primordial wisdom. What's jealousy? I want what you got and I don't have it. What are you going to get? If you liberate, what are you going to have? I got it. I will get it. Instead of going, I will kill you, I will destroy you, I will push you away, because jealousy is a terrible poison, right? I don't like you because I'm jealous, right? What is it? I will accomplish all of that. All accomplishing. No fear in accomplishing. Fantastic. And that means that you have the ability then to have Buddha activity for all beings. In that way, all the 84,000 afflictive emotions which arise from the five root afflictive emotions are liberated within self-awareness. What are they all? They are self-awareness, the energy of self-awareness, nothing else. Remember, this is graduate school. By knowing one of all the 84,000 doors of the Dharma, which extend from the five root primordial wisdoms, one becomes a master of all. From one, you can gain all the others. From one Yidam practice, liberating through one Yidam practice, you will know the nature of all Yidam practices. You can master them all quickly. Listen, if you can pick one lock, anybody ever tried that? Let me see if you get the metaphor. If you can pick one lock, the chances are after that, you'll be able to pick all locks eventually. By learning. Does it make sense? Just pick the first lock. I'm not advocating. Okay. Get into the first safe. Crack the first safe, and then you go, I could crack all safes. Did you follow that? You know, if swimming a length underwater, say 30 meters or something, is scary for you with one breath, once you accomplish, you go, I could do two lengths. I could do three lengths. I could do four lengths. Okay. So opening up one door gives you the confidence that you could actually know all doors by essence, even if you don't practice them all. Okay. By knowing all, one is self-liberated through one. Yeah. That is, know the essence. Know the essence. Find the essence of every Yidam practice. Find the essence of all Vipassana, a samatha vipassana practice, the essence. What is it? Mind's vivid, energetic awareness, awakeness. It says in the luminous expanse, the ground of all samsara nirvana is unique. It arises from self-arisen primordial wisdom itself. That is, Buddha awake awareness is all there is. That awareness is merely called primordial wisdom. It's just given a name. That's what you want to find. Don't keep harping after your conditioned awareness. Go beyond conditioned mind. Go beyond consciousness. Go find that which is behind all of this. That's your mission. You got to get the guts up to do that. I am going to find out what all this experience is, and I won't give up until I make that discovery. Then it's a question of whether you want to spend the rest of your life completely unfolding that, right? Or partially. It also says, since various things are the energy of awareness, this is nothing but the energy of awareness. It's not brass, it's not gold, it's the energy of awareness. That's it. It just gave you an instruction. take 24 hours or 2 days, 3 days, and everything is the energy of awareness. Every being you meet, everything you look at, everything you touch, everything you hold, everything is none other than the energy of awareness. Come to that. 3 days, 4 days, a week. This is like subjects and a king. Who's the king or the queen? Awake, natural energy. We're the subjects, the manifestations. That's all. Okay. Can you have a king or a queen without subjects? They'd have a title, but they wouldn't be acting like a king or queen. Do you understand the metaphor? It'd be like the Prime Minister Trudeau sitting in his house like this. I'm the Prime Minister. Maybe talking with somebody else. I'm the Prime Minister. I've got no cabinet. There's no parliament. There's no citizens. But I'm still the Prime Minister by title. Prime Minister or no Prime Minister? No Prime Minister. There's no subjects. There's no citizens anymore. So this is it. This watch is just manifesting a manifestation of primordial awareness. That's all. Number 1.10. I'm going to move along here a little bit more speedy. Introduction to self-liberation of the collection of the six senses. Looking at the appearances of the objects and their subject, subtle thoughts and gross thoughts subsumed within the collection of the six senses. They have no self-nature. So we're using the method, which is very classic, again, of looking at the objects and the and their subjects. All right? Objects, subject, self, whatever it is. They have no self-nature. So we're using that method. Thus, they are liberated like a rainbow fading into space. Well, they're telling you what you're going to find. Yep. Rainbows. From the one root, they unceasingly arise individually. Mind you, these things aren't metaphors. You say, oh, that's a lovely metaphor. No. All this is rainbow light right now. There's nothing else happening but rainbow light right now. That's the experience. It's nothing but rainbow light. From the one root, they unceasingly arise individually. They appear to arise individually. However, they do not stray from the space-like primordial wisdom of the self-arisen essence. Stirring is purified in its own place and thus liberated. So stirring, activity, energy is liberated. Why? What's all this activity? It's the Dharma Dhatu. It's actually not moving anywhere. Go run around the Dharma Center. See, you're not going anywhere. Get up when you're uncomfortable, and you get up and you stretch, and see that you're actually not going anywhere. You're not doing anything. The mind hasn't actually altered fundamentally at all. Time hasn't gone anywhere, and actually nothing ever got accomplished. So stirring, activity, moving about is purified in its own place and thus liberated. It says in the union of the sun and the moon, whoever realized that all phenomena of conceptualized appearances have no self-nature, empty like breeze moving through space, for this person appearances and emptiness are non-dual. The collection of the six senses unceasingly falls to what? All the six sensory experience unceasingly appears as energetic, liberative energy. That's all it is. Just stay with it. In that way, by looking, seeing, I like not seeing anything, looking, with no distraction, there's the instruction, from a state beyond conception, beyond conceptual contrivance. Conception here means from beyond birth, from beyond fabrications, and without expression. Don't make any expressions. Don't do anything. Stop. Stop doing. One is liberated from all grasping to phenomena. So this is beautifully described when Gampopa realized that he attained this supreme state, that there was no more grasping to any phenomena at all. All had been emptied out. From the beginning, one is self-liberated in the ground of primordial purity, utterly pure, Sangye. In that way, by focusing the intellect on the meaning of realization, there is no meditation. What could be meditating? What meditation is there to meditate at this point? What's the object? There's nothing to be meditated on. There's just mind. Mind is free. Why would you meditate on anything else but mind free? It's just the natural condition. Make sense? Yeah. Through not meditating upon meditation, which is a stage, very important stage one has to come to, one is self-liberated from grasping. If you're still meditating at this point, then you got a problem. Because you got a you and you have a meditation. But there's nothing to attain. It's already self-liberated. It's already naturally self-luminous awakeness. Not separating from the meaning of non-meditation is the dharma of confidence. Confidence in what? Utterly awake mind that requires no effort, no contrivance, no fixing, no thing that one needs to do. You now, the contemplation is the way it is. That's for confidence. And then that's also the getting towards the end of hope and fear. Since there is one's self-luminous essence, one is not sullied by discursive thoughts. So have any of you tried to get rid of discursive thoughts because they're bad, or they're wrong, or they're in the way? Why? Aren't they amazing? Like right now in the space of this room, have a thought. If you can find a thought, have a thought. Just relax like this. Go. Look at it in the space of the room. In the space of the room, not in your mind space, but in the space of the room of awareness. What thought could harm? What is the problem? Isn't that beautiful? It's glorious. It has no constraints. It has no stickiness. It's just like brilliant. It's brilliant. So you cannot get sullied. You can't get tainted by discursive thoughts unless you believe in discursive thoughts. So I come back to my main point here. If you believe that emotions and thoughts and sensations are real things that you need to go to do battle or change, then you're always going to be in there and you won't be liberated. But if you actually hear this, and when you're ready, don't do battle with thoughts, then they clear, like theater actors and actors, they just clear off the stage. And if they're on the stage, isn't that nice? It's beautiful. Did the car that went by interfere with the Dharma class? Had no interference. Does this have an interference to Dharma? Is the mind being interfered with? All is self-liberated into display of great primordial wisdom. Yes, if you become fully awakened in this lifetime or after death, then every little last trace of grasping, every little last trace of story-making, fabrications, concepts is liberated. The light, the luminous nature of this great primordial wisdom naturally arises within an outside or inside. No longer is there a universe out. No longer is there a universe in. No longer is there a being here. No longer is there Buddhas. No longer is there Buddhas over there and Buddha lands here and so on. It's all the space of awakeness, of Buddha awakeness. Having neither mindfulness nor distraction, is the Dharma of confidence. Not trying to be mindful anymore. That's been given up. Being mindful is great. It's a great stage, great practice. Eventually we have to pass beyond having to be mindful or getting rid of distraction. Samatha Vipassana. This is Samatha Vipassana. Thus one gains certainty. It says in No Letters, since there is no view, there is no basis to look at it. The idea of a view, to hold that there is a view, is a very compassionate view. However, there is no view. Understand that in the state of the non-fabricated view. So even the view you hold of Dzogchen or Mahamudra or liberation or Buddhas or awakeness, even that has to be vanquished. Make sense? Otherwise you're like this. There's some subtle, this is awake. There's some subtle, this is the awake state. There's no awake state. This is just awake. Do you understand? I'm practicing in awakeness. Wow. No, there isn't anything else but awake. It is the view, but eventually even the idea of a view has to be shot through. It also says, if one realizes the meaning of there being nothing to view, do not pass from the meaning of the view. In other words, Don't get rid of the view before you need. Don't get rid of the view before you can get rid of the view. And then when you get rid of the view, you will then have the view. That's what that means, right? You'll really have the view. Do not pass from the meaning of the view, but don't cling to the idea of the view. The view automatically does not exist. It is non-existent. Abide within that state. It is taught by recognizing in that way the meaning of self-abiding, elaboration is self-severed. In other words, why? It's already been severed. There is no elaboration. Conceptual mind makes an elaboration, but there's never been an elaboration. Characteristics are self-liberated. Why? There are no characteristics. By comprehending that, one understands cutting through. Through cut. It's a good way of translating. Through cut. Completely through cut. Or trecho. The fruit is self-complete. The fruit is already here. You see on the shrine? That's proof. There's a plum on the shrine? There is a plum on the shrine. That is proof that the fruit is self-existing. It's just nature. This is true, right? How could you dispute it now? The fruit is arisen. Probably saying, he's a fruit! Okay, you see? No, the fruit is always, the fruit is self-complete. The fruit doesn't arise. The fruit is the nature, is Buddha nature. Knowing one thing, all is liberated. It says in the reverberation of sound, since self-awareness is free from all thoughts, there are the four great modes of liberation, that is the Shaka, Prasheka Buddha, Bodhisattvas, and secret Mantrayana. That's what that means. Since there is primordial liberation, the ground is not repeated. You don't have to make a new ground. The ground is already there. Since there is inherent liberation, there is no antidote. You can use antidotes. Please use antidotes. Just realize that an antidote is a construct of mind to bring you to the path. Don't get fooled. All antidotes and meditations are to bring you to this luminous self-awareness. It's self, it's already there. Okay? Get that. It's already there. It's a tool. Eventually, we've got to drop the tool. There are no antidotes ultimately. However, please use antidotes out of compassion. Since there is naked liberation, the seen object fades away. Nothing can be seen. Nothing can be heard. Since there is full liberation, there is no effort. Yeah. Because it says the highest way of teaching is to make no effort. Not even a bit of effort. Used to have Rinpoche, you know, I sometimes live with Namdi Rinpoche, you know, times of my life in his house, and I'd be off to give a class here or somewhere, and he'd always try to interfere with me, make sure I never had a chance to prepare. Make some tea, watch some television, do this. Hey, someone, you know, Terry, come down the house, knock on the door. Rinpoche wants to know what you're doing. I'm reading a book. Let's go watch a movie. You know, so you know, it's like no chance prepare for a Dharma class. Just let it come out. Let it manifest. Doesn't mean you don't prepare, but really you know that all you need to do is convey Buddha nature. All you need to do is speak pristine awareness and beings liberate. It also says, if one's mind is liberated in that way, one attains Buddhahood without the bardo. You don't have to rely on the bardo for liberation. In the Sambhogakaya, one attains a Buddhahood by the awareness which is unchanging now at death or in the bardo or even in rebirth. Therefore, such an introduction is very important. And then number two, section two, instructions of the well, since we're not going there, these are understood from other sources. So Togyal instructions are not being taught. These oral instructions of the introduction were given to the Dakini Yeshe Shogo by Guru Padmasambhava. May these meet with fortunate ones in the future. Samaya gya 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 iti, or thus stated. Gya gya is sealed. Samaya, commitment to full liberation for all sentient beings, sealed as a treasure, iti, thus so. So if you can practice in this way, excellent. If you can't yet practice in this way, then important to hear the high view, important to hear the high meditation, important to hear the instructions of Guru Rinpoche, so that your mind knows, your being knows where it's going to and where you're headed. It's very important. Do you all want to take a 5-minute stretch? Let's do that. 5-minute stretch, and then a recitation and brief reading and practice of the sadhana of Namjal. that completes the reading transmission of the Sāda Namjal. I haven't forgotten that request. Go if the others are out there. we're just looking for atomic atoms. Just double checking the text I have hasn't lost a page in the printing. Oh, so that's the right text. Good. Okay. Let us practice together, very briefly, reading and practice together, short sadhana of Namjal. So this practice of the Guru Yoga, or the Guru, Namjal Guru Yoga, it went through a number of iterations and changes. But from what I have found, this is actually the first way in which Namjal Rinpoche described this, and he actually described this, as I understood, from an experience that he had, a profound meditative experience, and then he gave it, and it was written down by Lama Sonam and Konchak Palmo, Gretchen. So they wrote this down from what he first gave out, and there's a number of versions of the Namjal Guru practice, but this one is dear to my heart. This is the one I first received, and it wasn't given very often after that. But Guru Vijaya Nama, Om Sobhava Shudasarva Dharma Sobhava Shudoham, Om Sobhava Shudasarva Dharma Sobhava Shudoham, Om Sobhava Shudasarva Dharma Sobhava Shudoham. Out of shunyata arises a lotus, blue-white and fringed at the tips of the petals with pink. A moon disc appears on this, and standing upright in the center is the blue-white seed syllable, brum. Diamond blue rays of light stream out from this, permeating the depths of space. And evoking all the radiant consciousnesses residing in the galaxies. The light rays return, endowed with the universal vibrations, and flow back into the seed syllable, which becomes hollow and translucent. In an instant, the broom dissolves, and in its place appears a crystal cave, the palace of the Namjals. The walls, the cavern are covered with cosmic symbols in undulating flushes of color and studded with every kind of natural gemstone. Water is streaming down. This also symbolizes Beth, the bower of the Magus, the rainbow arch. Dakinis continuously pass through the walls of the cave, appearing and reappearing. And again the bija, broom, the seed syllable broom, appears at the center of the cave. Then white dakinis, each bearing the symbol of the mantra, dance clockwise around the seed syllable, pouring out amrit nectar, which is absorbed into the broom. Om amrita yuridezwa, 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 om amrita yuridezwa. they, the Dakinis, pray for the Guru Namjul to appear. Instantly, the broom transforms into the Lord himself, Namjul, or Vijaya, the victorious one. The Vijaya is Sanskrit for Namjul. He appears in the form of a yogi with fierce countenance. His body is pink flushed and covered with millions of tiny points of color. His left hand, he holds aloft the thigh bone trumpet, the symbol of walking the path, the wanderer, which he blows into and alternatively looks through like a telescope microscope. In the crook of his right arm, he bears the Namjul vase of victory, which is overflowing like a cornucopia with the precious jewels, silks, and rainbow-colored streamers. In the right hand, he holds a skull bowl, and around his right wrist is a short rosary of human skulls. He is dancing in a state of abandoned joy, with the right leg outstretched and the left slightly bent. He wears a single white robe thrown loosely round his body. It sparkles with hidden radiances, like a network of glowworms, or phosphorescent blue lights, tiny jewels, etc. His hair is braided and streaming down. He is a symbol of victory over the repository of the mind, the records. The cave in which he dances symbolizes the body, especially the skull. I'll read what it says here, a little note. This meditation has the same realizations as the practice of the mandala offering, where one visualizes oneself at the center of a crystal planet, looking out into space in all directions. Aho Mahasukho, 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 Mahasukho, Aho Mahasukho, Aho Mahasukho, Aho. Ah, love, ho, awakening, ma, mother, ha, father, together, great. Su, good, kyo, flight of the rising ego. Hearing the cries, he looks down from his cave and sees the suffering of sentient beings, and great compassion arises. Once again, the Dakinis make offerings, and instantly both the Namjul and his cave dissolve into a blue-white diamond radiance, which diffuses through the depths of space. Om ma hung vajra ho, 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 om ma hung vajra ho, ma hung vajra ho, ma hung vajra ho, ma hung vajra ho, om ma hung vajra ho, ma hung vajra ho, ma hung vajra ho, om ma hung vajra ho, ma hung vajra ho, Om Mahung Varo, Mahung Varo, Mahung Varo, Mahung Varo, Om Mahung Varo, Mahung Varo, Om Mahung Varo. Then the radiance returns and coalesces into the emerged form of the Namjul, seated on a white eagle, soaring out into the world to benefit all beings. He flies with ease through all the warps of space-time continuum, sounding forth his mantra and calling to beings to awaken to the power of love. Om ma jina jina hung 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 om ma om ma jin jin hung 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 om ma j His right hand is flung upwards, holding the vajra with the forefinger pointing the way to liberation. Left hand is held in the excellent mudra, a bestowal. And from the palm, a stream of jewels, stars and planets, suns and all the riches of the universe pour forth. He is seated in the posture of royal ease, with the right leg extended, the left drawn in. He is mounted on the back of the great white eagle of the Namjals. With fierce beak and blazing one-pointed eyes looking straight ahead, the finest of soft white down covers the eagle. Oma guru guru dong, 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 oma guru guru dong. Through time and space, the Namjal mantra reverberates like the drum of victory. Oma hung vajra ho, oma hung vajra ho, oma hung vajra ho. Another mantra that he added, Om kaya vajra, vajra vajra, chitta vajra, hung ho. Om kaya vajra, vajra vajra, chitta vajra, hung ho. Om Gaya Vajra, Vajra Vajra, Chitta Vajra, Hung Ho. This is very short sadhana. Likely the first, and of course there's versions. Then was added this peaceful form. So it has three. It has the wrathful form, it has the peaceful form, it has a kind of another peaceful form, and then it has the Namjal riding on the white eagle, and that sadhana, which I usually give, and usually we usually celebrate here, is called the three cantos. So the three cycles of the vision of Namjal. So everything in that sadhana has just been taught, if you wish, in Guru Rinpoche's vast, limitless expanse. Okay, so it's getting on, and see you this evening, those that are coming to receive or to if you wish, redo their refuge, or not redo, but retake and not retake.
Refresh?
Refresh.
Mm-hmm. Recollect. Recollect. Yeah, yeah. Refresh, recollect. Bring back strength to their refuge, precepts and bodhisattva commitments for those that are receiving it for the first time. I'll see you tonight, and otherwise, I believe we have a 2 o'clock meeting here. Yes? Okay. And make a short aspiration, dedication. By this powerful activity, may it lead to the cessation of floods for all sentient beings. Idante punyakamang asoakiwango tu idante punyakamang asoakiwango tu idante punyakamang asoakiwango tu. Sabe sata sigdahantu, may all beings have excellent relative happiness and excellent relative health, and may they discover primordial awareness, ungraspable, unborn, the deathless nature, the perfect unity of compassion and wisdom as the most glorious gift for all sentient life. Sarvamangalam, Sarvamangalam, Sarvamangalam. Great joy. Great joy. You see, it's not so complex. But conceptual minds need conceptual things to unbind those conceptual minds, and that's compassion. Whereas non-dual teaching, always non-dual teaching, for conceptual beings, that's not necessarily fair. So they need antidotes. Good antidotes.
Okay.
Oh, there's a note that got ripped up. Let's see if we can.
Oh,
yeah. Not that one. Almost put through a shredder. Bye, Zoomers. See you later, Zoomers. May you all be happy, and may we all celebrate Namjul's birthday, Namjul Rinpoche's birthday. Great, great guru, great lama. And may he continue to unfold and support. And even though has passed away, his Dharmakaya, Sambhogakaya radiance is everywhere to be contacted. So what a great gift to all sentient beings. Guru Namjoon. So there is a note here that says, do not rip up this note. That's what it says. It says, Lama, don't rip up this note. Please. That's what it says, I think. So there. Lama, could you take the time not to rip up notes? I think that's it. It says, hello, Lama. Ah, okay, I got it. I decoded it. Okay. Yes. Answer is yes. Okay. Chris, if you can put Chris on the list. Wouldn't that be funny one day if I came to a class and there's no handout?